Today is Monday, the 1st of August, 2011, and I'm Michael Marty, and I'm here to have a conversation with you about your experiences 50 years ago, back in June of 1961, as one of the original forerunners to prepare Holden Village to become what it has become today. So if you could start off by just sharing your full name, we can get going from there.
My name is Mary Rue, and maiden name was Hedman at the time. I was a 16-year-old when I came here, and had my 17th birthday on June 22nd here at the village. I don't think we celebrated it particularly. I think it went unnoticed, probably, because of the excitement of pouring of the slab for the generators happened on that day. I didn't remember that until I was just reading the diaries here. But, actually, I had visited in 1960, the year before, with my family. My father was Pastor Carl Walden Hedman, who was a teacher at the Lutheran Bible Institute in Seattle. Okay. And the Holden Village had been offered to LBI, as we know it. And there were several families of us that came up to just see what this ghost town was all about. Okay. And we came up on a weekend, and it was just magical. I mean, every kid wants to go to see a ghost town, and here it was, and to experience it. Then, a year later, we had heard that they were looking for young adults to come up, and so I submitted my name and was chosen as one of the 40 or 41 men there were, and was pleased to be here. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Now, were you in high school at the time?
I had graduated. Okay. I had just graduated. I graduated early.
Okay.
And it was a good experience for me in that my parents had been missionaries in Africa, in Tanzania. Tanganyika was then. And so I had grown up there and came back as a 13-year-old and never felt in high school like I really fit in to the crowd, and was just looking for a place to get away, and this was it. This was a good, I felt it was a starting point for really feeling like I fit into the American lifestyle. It felt real good.
So, did you experience a contrast between your peers up here in the Forerunner student group from your high school peers?
Right. I think I did. It felt comfortable to be in a Christian atmosphere because I had grown up in Africa that way, going to boarding school and all of that with all fellow Christians, you know, and then going to high school where that wasn't the case. It just felt real comforting to be here with people who had the same faith issues, you know, it was just very comfortable and wonderful.
Well, you were telling me when you first came in here that you were at the old miners' village, and that you find that to be a very peaceful and calming place. I wonder, did you get to see that when you came up with your father?
Oh, yes, we did. And then again, as forerunners, experience the same thing. When we came into the village, it just seemed overwhelming, all of the mess of the lodges and the chalets and all of that. And then to wander farther down the road and see the village, here were little tiny houses, and wandering through them, oh, it was just overwhelming to see how fast people had left the village, just like overnight. And, you know, there were clothespins and clothes on clotheslines, and table, the dishes were on the table. Of course, they'd been messed up by vandals and mice and all of that, you know. But there were dishes all over. It was fun to look in the closets, and, you know, there were clothing items and toys, and just to imagine what life was like just several years before, 4 years before, and how quickly people left, and they left their possessions. They just got out. You wonder why they didn't try to pack a little bit more out. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
But there's no goodwill here. I suppose they just left.
Yeah.
And now, going back today as I walked through it, all you can see is the steps up to the house. And I saw a few pot shards around, but there's not much else. Mm-hmm. A few pipes where, you know, water or whatever went into the homes. But these tiny little cute places, and you just wonder what life is like back then. Mm-hmm. Imagination can just take you back to another simpler time, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Perhaps a harder time.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that when you came into the village here, it was challenging maybe to see all of the work that needed to be done, mm-hmm. or the disarray that the mm-hmm. village was in. Mm-hmm. Were you, I suppose, when you came up with the Forerunners group, you already knew what it looked like.
I did.
So you weren't surprised the way that they were.
No.
What was that, what were their reactions like, and how did you perceive that? Were they really surprised at what it looked like, or had they been told this is a ghost town and it needs a lot of work? And so they were just like, oh, okay, this is normal, I expected this.
I think everybody was just shocked, really, as we had been here previously. Mm-hmm. I remember the year previously when we came up as a family, as families. It was just really fun going down in the bowling alley, and it was dark down there. There's no electricity, of course, and trying to, we could only do it in the daylight when there's a little light, mm-hmm. Set the pins and bowl a little bit,
yeah.
You know, and it was really fun. And mostly just snooping through the houses was fun. But then as Forerunners, you know, I think they all experienced that same thing. And as I remember, after working during the day, some of us would just say, oh, let's go and look through a few more houses, you know. And so we'd pick a few different homes and snoop through them and see what we could find. Yeah.
That's really interesting. Yeah. So that was a leisure activity to go.
Oh, it was. Yeah, that was joy. Yes, just joy.
You had the afternoons off, no work in the afternoon?
Sometimes we worked, sometimes we didn't. We got up at 5 o'clock or 5:30, and, you know, breakfast and devotions at 5:45. So we started work early, had a break in the morning, lunch, and then sometimes if there was a project going on, we would continue, mm-hmm. often into the afternoon. But they let us enjoy it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going down to the field beyond the miners' village, mm-hmm. and playing baseball and volleyball.
Oh, really?
And that was fun. That was a good time.
Yeah.
I wonder if any of the weeds are mowed down. I mean, I was just there now, and the weeds are knee high.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Oh, no.
I wonder if we just trampled them down. I don't know. I can't remember. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
And then hikes. There was always time for hikes. We did every hike that there is around here, and several times.
Mm-hmm.
Just lots of energy in that group.
Yeah.
And then we didn't have electricity, and so after, I believe it was before supper, that we had a Bible study with Dr. Bergstrand, and then dinner, and cleanup, and oftentimes a campfire, and singing around the campfire and stuff, and, or a ball game down at the ball field, or a little walk someplace. Good fun times, good healthy times.
Well, so can you tell me a little bit about what meals were like?
Yeah. I was just remembering this in reading some of the material, and it jogged my memory. The meal fountain was behind chalet number two, and Bertha Pearson was our wonderful cook. She had been an institutional cook before. She was a cook at LBI, actually.
Okay.
And
In Seattle,
and she knew what she was doing. But she had to cook over a wood stove.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking with Jim Weiberg, and he said that we found a three-legged wood-burning stove at the miner's cabin that they hauled over for her. And we actually had homemade bread out of that place.
Wow.
And the meals were scrumptious, pancakes often. I don't believe we ever had cold cereal. I don't remember that we did. I think it was hot cereal. Refrigeration was an issue because we didn't have electricity, but we had the cold creek, and we were trying to remember how we kept things cold, but they said that there was a garbage can that we put our foodstuffs in and immersed it in the water of the creek. Mm-hmm. And 4 days after we had been here, we got word that the Augustana Lutheran church body was having a large convention in Seattle. And Wilton Bergstrand, who was our program director here, had invited the dignitaries from there to come and see Holden Village. Cool. And they came up on a chartered boat. There were 60 of them. And 60. And Bertha and the rest of us helping her put on the spread. I believe it was in the what is now the chapel.
Uh-huh.
And we had fried chicken for 60 of them plus 40 of us. And we actually had a salad that we made. We carved out a watermelon and had fruit salad inside this carved out watermelon. I mean, it was fussy. It was really, really special.
That's incredible.
It is remarkable
that you could do that without electricity.
Exactly.
On a small stove in the mountains like this.
Yes, yeah, on a wood stove.
Yeah.
And have chicken cookies and chicken.
About how big would you say the stove was?
I've seen pictures of it, 3 feet by 4 feet maybe.
3 feet by 4 feet.
Yeah, and it had a little oven.
Okay.
Having grown up in Africa, that's how my mother cooked as well. So, it was not that odd for me to see that kind of thing happen. But eventually we got a generator.
Okay.
And I'm sure that Bertha was able to, transfer some of her skills onto another kind of.
Probably through your time with it, or.
Definitely the generator came while we were here. Those were the big generators, and they weren't started up till the very end.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a different generator.
Yeah, this is just a little bitty one.
Okay.
Yeah. And but I was reading Dr. Bergstrand's feel on, or his memoirs on the Holden experience. And he said that that one meal with the 60 people of the dignitaries was the best public relations thing that we could have done. And what thrills me is that we were able to show other people hospitality, and that same hospitality is going on today. And that just tickles me pink, you know? The same reception we gave to all the visitors. We had lots of visitors come and had to show them through and feed them and stuff like that. But, you know, we showed hospitality, and that same wonderful spirit has continued to pervade this place. And I'm so grateful for that. It's neat.
Yeah. Well, so when I imagine that when you were here, you were spending some considerable time, not just alone in your mind, but also as a group discussing this, thinking about what this place was to become and what it was going to mean to people who would come up here in the future, and sort of, I mean, you guys were preparing the way for something that you did not yet know what it would look like. And now here it is today. And I'm curious to hear some of your reflections on the contrast between those two, the idea and the reality, and the similarities, the things where you were like, I mean, perhaps the vision you had for this is exactly what it's become, but perhaps there are things that are different.
Back then, growing up, having grown up in a pastor family that was so conservative, what I wrote in my hopes for the village was that it would become a retreat place for spiritual growth, especially for young adults. And my fear was that it would become a hiking lodge, or, you know, some place where it would just be the outdoors. Now I see both happening, and it's wonderful, you know, to be able to appreciate God's creation and not just be stuck in the Bible all the time. I think it's become more than I ever thought it would be. And what thrills me too is the wonderful speakers that they continually flow through here. My husband is a pastor, and so I've been up here to pastoral conferences with him, and I've heard, you know, Walt Wangren and I just can't begin to name them all, but some wonderful, wonderful speakers, and your father too. It's awesome that they can glean all these wonderful people from all over the world and stretch them spiritually and socially and globally and so many other ways into something that a much bigger vision than what I had initially thought it would be.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
It must be really exciting to watch it blossom in ways that you hadn't anticipated.
Yeah. Dr. Bergstrand is a wonderful, wonderful Bible teacher. And I'll never forget, you know, the impressions I had of his studies on John the Baptist and Ephesians, that they will always make me think of Dr. Bergstrand and the times we had here. And those things, I'm sure, continue on here too. We've been back about, you know, 5 or 6 times since.
Typically for reunions, or do you come at other times?
I've never been here for a reunion before.
Oh, right.
This is new for me, and it has stretched me too, because everybody wants to know about my memories, and I'm having to scour through the books to see, mm-hmm. what did we do? But it all comes back.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah.
Well, now when you came up, you were 16, right?
Yeah.
With the Forerunners group, yeah. You were 16. So you were proud, were you?
I think I was one of the youngest. A lot of the folks already had their careers. Mm-hmm. There were several nurses and there was, people who had finished college or finished their education and were already working, and many who were in college. And I was a bit intimidated by, the older kids, but, once I got my roommate, Bobby Bauer, we had so much fun together, and mm-hmm. she was going to be starting college too, so.
Okay.
So that was neat. Yeah. I had graduated young, uh-huh. because I was homeschooled and mother taught me mm-hmm. early. So
yeah.
I finished it.
Well, so how did this experience sort of form you and shape your life plans? Did you see this as something very influential? Or was it a few weeks during the summer that were really meaningful, but maybe didn't? Did it give you a new direction in life? Did it inspire something in you? Did it teach you some lesson? What did you get out of it?
I think I gained a sense of service, that I could be doing something, without pay, just to help. Mm-hmm. Ended up going to the Lutheran Rebel Institute for 2 years, and then to nurses training and became an RN.
Okay.
And I think I was shaped a lot before I came, grounded in the direction I was heading with my life. I had wonderful parents, and I knew the direction I was going. I think it just brought out some of those desires to be of service, mm-hmm. And then it was just nice to be free up here with like-minded kids for a while. That I could just explore my faith freely with them and be nurtured by them as well. Mm-hmm. And then, I was off and running to go to LBI and nurses training. It was mm-hmm. great. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Did you feel like the group of young people had largely similar theological dispositions about things? Was there a lively conversation of people who disagreed, or was it more, or were people coming from a similar background? I guess were there any evident differences to you between different people's
faith?
There were
some. I was so young, I'm not sure. I know there were some that were probably not as interested in the faith part of it, but Dr. Bergstrand had us, divided, Gilbert or somebody, had us divided into four groups, mm-hmm. and for a whole week, our team had to plan the devotions. And so, when you're on target to plan something, you have to, and they were well thought out mm-hmm. devotions. They, mm-hmm. We planned them carefully and thoughtfully. And it makes you get into it a little bit when you're responsible. It's your job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm sure there was a variety of um, places in faith journey for each of the people.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it does sound like Walt, the man who led the Bible study.
Oh, Dr. Bergstrand, yeah.
Dr. Bergstrand, right. It does sound like he was very influential on all the students, and that his Bible studies were very well received.
Yes. And I remember him saying that his project that summer was to really get into the life of John the Baptist. And he wrote a book after that.
Do you think that the conversations that he shared with all of you influenced his writing of the book? Or was he planning to write the book and he was sort of trying to do a foray into it?
He was just doing a study, and I'm not sure if the book was just a copy. I've seen a copy of that, and I wish I had it with me now, but we have it at home. But I don't know if that was just a compilation of his studying it or what.
Okay.
He was known for his study on John the Baptist.
Okay. So what was your relationship like with the various staff people, like Bertha?
Bertha was such a sweetie pie. She just was just quiet and sweet and cheerful, never naggy or harsh at all. She got the work done. I mean, with help.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. Reuben Thompson, who was the caretaker, and his dog, Bugger, real quiet person. I can't imagine him staying all alone here the whole winter by himself. Just him and his doggy. And then Bergstrand's nice people. So he was so organized and such a good PR person for all the visitors that we had. And then Dolores' wife was just a sweetie pie, and she was kind of the queen bee that kind of kept, was the hostess here, pretty much. And really a nice lady. And their little kids. And then Gilbert had the jobs for us to do, and, you know, real fun guy, but business-like. And we knew what had to be done. And amazingly, the forerunners were some such gifted people. John Hill was the fireman, or whatever, did the fire stuff, and I think it was Ken Barrett. Or was it Ken Hyder? I can't remember. You know, did the masonry for the kitchen chimney. You know, some they knew what they were doing.
Yeah,
was amazing. And Bob Gonski was good at, you know, getting the generators all together. I was amazed. Yeah. I was glad. I was just glad to wash windows and do what I was told.
Was there any sort of mess or situation that you had to clean up or deal with that was just really atrocious, like maybe toilet bowls or something like that?
You know, I wasn't on that brigade. I wasn't on the toilet bowl.
Fortunately, huh?
Yeah, that's just fine. But, you know, I did windows. Everything was so filthy, just filthy. And I think the kitchen probably was the worst, because they had the deep fryers and everything that they had just let the grease just spin.
Oh, no.
And it was gross.
And you didn't fish the deep fryers, you cleaned that grease out, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. and I actually didn't get in there to do that particular thing. But that was one of the things that we did. And the one day I remember, and maybe it was more than a day, I don't remember, but cleaning out the road between here and Lucerne, that was hard work.
It wasn't clear?
There were a lot of boulders in it, or stones, and we had to just cleared it so that the truck could get through easily. It was pretty...
Was there an ambulance that happened, or
I don't know.
How did you get up to the village?
I don't know if we just dodged the boulders or what, but that was one of the things we had to do, is just make it clear. Interesting. And when I think back on it, I can't remember ever taking a shower up here. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we did, and once we got hot water eventually. But there was no hot water, and just now I was down wading in Railroad Creek. That is cold water. Yeah. And I do remember putting on bathing suits and dipping in that.
Do you think that's how you took a shower, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Get cleaned up. Oh, definitely. I do remember that.
Okay.
It was cold. Have you been down there?
Yes, I have. Oh. It's very cold.
Yeah.
I was out this morning, and so if I would have needed to take a shower this morning, mm-hmm. at 6 a.m., it was 48 degrees out.
Yes.
And getting in like 33-degree water when the air is 48 degrees, it's just miserable.
Right. And whoever wrote the daily log, and there's a copy of it right over there, mm-hmm. They put the morning temperature in. And there was a morning it was 34 here.
Really?
Yeah. And it was always 38, 43, you know? I mean,
that's cold.
Yeah.
You guys had sleeping bags?
We did. So I think we hauled them up.
Do you remember being cold overnight in the middle of the night?
Or no,
not really.
It was
just cold when you got up to start work?
Yeah, and go out for breakfast.
Poor Bertha. She was probably up at 4.
Probably.
Getting it started.
Probably. Poor Bertha. Oh my goodness. She was one sweetheart. She really was. Yeah. And we had ham, we had chicken, we had good stuff to eat. Roast beef.
No, that food, would that come in periodically, or would you bring up a whole bunch and then store it and keep it cool?
I think it came up weekly, probably, on the boat, and she probably would send her her grocery list down, and somebody would pick it up, I suppose. I don't know. But we ate well, and we had lots of bread.
Okay.
I actually...
Did she make the bread?
Yes. Wow. Yeah. And I suppose we did too, you know, helped her. Zelda was the one that worked closely with Bertha.
Okay.
The two of them worked together nicely.
Do you know why it was Zelda that was chosen for that?
I don't know if she had cooking experience for crowds or not. And then we always had bouquets of wildflowers on the tables.
Where did you eat?
We just hung around outside Chalet 2 to start with, and when it was icy cold, then we would just go inside the chalet.
Okay.
And then we ate not in the hotel. I think we ate down in the chapel.
Okay.
I believe. Eventually.
That's where you put the wildflowers.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially when we make company.
Mm-hmm.
That would be where we did that.
But there's not much light in there. Did you just open windows and try to...
I don't know. I really don't
Maybe
know.
Maybe candles?
Yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But mostly it was eating outside. Definitely lunch was outside. Mm-hmm. And then we ate at 5, and it was summertime, so I suppose we just mostly ate outside.
Mm-hmm. That helps a lot.
Yeah, it does.
Now, I was told that there were some children in the village that belonged to some of the staff members.
Yeah, Bergstrands had two little boys that were there.
Did you ever get to interact with them?
You know, we did a little bit, but they were just little guys, like 2 and 4, three and five, or something like that. And we were out working or hiking and stuff, and then they would just stay with their mom be here. But yeah, they were fun. And I think they were the only little guys that were.
Okay.
That were, yeah.
I was told that there were some teenagers in the village, maybe.
Oh, La Ross. Yeah.
How old were they in relation to you, do you know?
John Ross, I think, was maybe 13, 12 or 13, and Judy was maybe 10, that would be my guess.
Okay.
A little bit younger.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't remember how much they participated in the program. Maybe some, but I don't recall that. Yeah. John LaRoss is now a family practice doctor in Olympia, where I live.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you said that you didn't really celebrate your 17th birthday, but what was that day like? What do you remember from?
Nothing.
You don't remember that day?
No, I don't remember it at all. I don't remember it at all. But then we never, back in those days, in our family, other than having a cake that was a box cake, that's about all we did. We didn't have parties. Never grew up having parties, and we didn't celebrate birthdays that much.
You said that the generator platform was born that day?
I believe so. Something major was
happening. Something big was happening.
Yeah.
So even if you had wanted to celebrate your birthday, it would have been eclipsed?
Of course. And so it should have been. Yeah, no big deal.
So, let's see. You told me a little bit about what you thought Holden would be and what it could become for you, and a little bit also about what this experience was like. But are there any memories that stand out as really special moments for you from this time? Anything that you can remember that was really like, maybe not life-changing, but just like, wow, you know, this is, wow, we're doing this right now. Like, I heard that there was a trip into the mine.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
yes,
that?
Yes. That was amazing. That was right after we first came, but one of the caretaker, somebody who was in charge of the mine, or knew the mine, took us all through about a mile into the mine, and we had to wade through, you know, ankle deep water, and water was dripping down. We had flashlights. They made sure we had flashlights. And then at one point, I remember turning it off, having us turn off the flashlights. The darkness was so dark. Oh, scary. And at one point, we came upon a cavern. I mean, it was just like a huge gymnasium the size of a football field or two. I don't know how big it was. It was huge. I guess it was huge. I mean, everything was black, but it was just a huge hole. And somebody threw a pebble down, and it took 23 seconds for it to splash. Just the danger of people wandering in there. You know, and not knowing where you're going, and could be fatal. It was just so much fun exploring all those things, all those old things. And then on the tailings, it was clear. So there are no trees whatsoever. It was just all tailings. And you know, we'd go up there and play baseball up there. and frisbee and stuff, and just so dusty and so dirty. it was just a lot of fun. Good friendships made. I think some of the older ones retained a lot of those friendships. Mm-hmm. More, maybe because they came to the reunions and, sure. and nurtured those friendships. But I've lost track of my friend Bobby, and I would love to get together with her. She made it so much fun to be with. Other important things, I think, I mean, every day was an adventure. Mm-hmm. It was fun. And the hikes were just wonderful.
Did you go on some overnight hikes that would have been more than a single day trip?
I don't think I ever went on an overnight hike. I didn't go up to, I did go to Lyon. But I don't believe I stayed overnight there. It was just a day trip. And up to Holden and, you know, all the different ones. But a couple years later, when I was in nurse's training, I had a month off, and I was working with a church in Seattle as a youth, helping with the youth program there. And we hiked from Darrington over 23 miles. And so, you know, I ended up, you know, that was huge. and back then, in those days, we didn't have fancy REI backpacks. Right. We had, what do you call them, backboards. They were canvas with boards on the side, and you just strapped everything to it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so everybody had a backboard. That doesn't sound like a coffee. Anyway, and I didn't have money to purchase boots for this hike, so I just wore my duty shoes, my nurse shoes.
Oh.
But they worked out fine.
Really?
They worked out really well. Didn't get a blister. And I had no preparation at all for this hike. I just started walking. Mm-hmm. And that's a good stiff hike out over Cloudy Pass and all the way into town. Yeah.
Wow.
Fun. You took the boat out. Yeah.
Well, so even if your memory is not perfect of all of these things that happened and the details of this time, it clearly inspired you to return.
Oh,
and
yes.
Evoked an enthusiasm in you for this place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fun to see here.
I think what I think about Holden is that it really is a place of heart. You know, getting away from the crazy life that we lead, you know, that's so frantic at times, and just having time to smell the roses and to take a quiet walk and, you know, enjoy the grandeur of everything around us, and listening to the waterfalls. And, oh, so nice. And then to be able to come back and have a nice meal and not have to worry about preparing it. And then have a good stimulating conversation, you know, or learn a new craft or whatever. I just think Holden has done wonderful things over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If it had, but you needed to start somewhere. We're really grateful that you guys were.
Oh, it was a privilege for us. It really was. It's fun to be part of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we think we're the lucky ones to have been been there to see how it was and how it's becoming.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. This is wonderful. If you've got anything more to say, we've got a bit of time, but this has been a great conversation.
Well, I think that that's all I can remember.
Well, it must be good to fun to jog the memory this way, and
it
every
is.
Time you talk about it, probably more comes back.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And it'll be fun too tonight to see you all come together and share the stories as a group.
Yeah.
Because when you do that, sometimes someone will say, start telling a story, and someone else will say, and I remember this detail about that.
Yeah.
And there'll be, you know.
Yeah, I hope it's interactive like that.
Well, so far, everyone I've talked to has confirmed 23 seconds on the stone drop and stuff.
Yeah.
Inside the mine. So that detail is very critical.
You've got that one.
It's a long way down.
It's a great time.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Mary.
I really appreciate this. This was fun to fun to be part of it.
And it's a pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
I'll see you tonight at the forum.
Good.
Thank you.